I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories.
Hi, my name is Anna, also known as the Spiritual Midwife, and I am the Natural Birth podcast host. I'm a midwife and a childbirth educator, a women's work facilitator, mentor, and coach, and I assist women in optimizing their chances of having an empowering and natural birth experience and to truly claim their birth as a rite of passage. If you want to know more about me and what I do in the world, then please visit me at thenaturalbirthcourse.com or connect with me on Instagram as the_spiritual_midwife. Now, if you love this podcast, then please consider taking a moment and leave a review, as this is how you can help us reach more women around the world with these natural and empowering birth stories. The Natural Birth Podcast also has a Patreon page, so if you'd like to shout me a cup of coffee to show me your appreciation for the podcast, then you can do that there. Thank you for all your support and love. It's deeply appreciated. Today is International Women's Day, and I want to put out an extra episode today with a conversation I just had with Jane Hardwick Collins, a former midwife and the founder of the School of Shamanic Womancraft. Jane is affected by the flooding in New South Wales, Australia, but not as badly as my old hometown and the area of Northern Rivers. We both feel deeply for the community that we know and love and want to offer our help to them and to all pregnant and birthing women from all over the world faced with war and natural disasters, leaving them birthing in crisis. This episode will go into the full process of labor and birth and how to keep it as safe and physiological as possible in the midst of crisis, as well as instruction and guidance for all women around the world to offer their moon blood to call in peace and safety for all sentient beings on this earth. We ask that you please share this episode. It will only take a minute of your time to share it on social media. Today is International Women's Day, and we celebrate the strength, resilience, and generosity of women. And I celebrate you for being a woman in my community, and I thank you for helping me help other women in crisis by sharing this episode. Blessings on your hearts. Want to connect with Jane? Find her on Instagram as Jane Hardwick Collins and find all other resources in the show notes of this episode. Hi, Jane, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. How are you going today?
Hi, Anna. I'm going well, thanks, but that's not the same for so many other people. So I feel like quite shaken and disturbed by the situation around the world. Yeah. And where I am in New South Wales in Australia is out of the actual sort of terrible flood-stricken places, but the rain is falling so hard. There's a lot of noise with the rain on my tin roof while I'm talking.
Yes, we're going to pray that during our conversation we won't be interrupted, that reception will stay strong so that we can truly get the message through.
So yes, I really resonate with what you say about feeling really overwhelmed by what's going on. Obviously, here in Europe, we have the Ukraine war and reports coming in of women having to birth unassisted in underground shelters. And any war zone obviously has this effect on women that are pregnant. And then obviously the Northern River is my old home. It's just devastated. And it has totally affected me too. The whole week I've been so overwhelmed. And I've had this strong, strong inner calling to do as much as I can from afar. And so reaching out to you, wanting to talk to you about all the knowledge that you have as also a former midwife and just the wisdom that you carry for not just being a midwife, but being so much more than that, the founder of the Shamanic Woman Craft School and all that you do in the world. And so this talk that we will have is both going to be towards women who might find themselves unassisted, going into labor in a disaster, in a crisis situation. Obviously, now we are really affected by what's going on, obviously, with the flooding in the northern New South Wales, with the war in the Ukraine. But this will be something that will be an ongoing thing for women around the world as crises arise, right? So this is an offering for, you know, for women from both of us on how to deal with the situation. We're going to talk about the whole labor process, what to expect, and tips, practical advice around this. And we will also end with actually talking about what women can do around the world collectively to support women from afar. So I am so deeply grateful, Jane, that you wanted to come on. It almost makes me want to cry. I have this fire within me that I just want to get this message out there in so many different ways. And I'm so grateful that you wanted to come and speak to me today.
Well, let's hope that this reaches all the women who need it and those who can help others as well.
Yes, absolutely. So let's dive on in, Jane. I know that you also offer, and I just want to say that you offer this beautiful checklist for women who find themselves birthing unassisted. I will link that obviously in the show notes so that women can click on that and get that checklist as well. So let's dive on in on how to.
Yeah, sure. Well, when we were talking before we started about what we might share, we decided we'd go through the process, as you said. So let's talk about how labor might start, what it might look like, and then the birth and what to do during the birth and after the birth. But I just want to remind everybody that we are animals and we're actually mammals. And the most important thing a mammal needs to give birth is to feel safe. Now, women, you're going to have to create a safe zone around yourself wherever you are. You know, we've seen pictures of women giving birth around with blankets around them on aeroplanes. We know that animals do whatever they have to do to get into a safe place. So just do whatever you have to be able, whatever you have to do to feel safe. So I'm thinking that mostly that's going to be privacy. So do something that you can create some sort of shelter or partition with blankets or even people standing there with them turned in the opposite direction, just so you feel shielded. And then if you feel shielded, then hopefully you'll feel safe. And all you have to do is feel safe and get out of your head of worrying, which I know is going to be the biggest thing, and trust that your body will be able to do the process because that's what it's designed to. We have to remember that as animals, as mammals, there is such a thing as physiological birth, which means it just happens.
Yes.
So the most significant thing you can do to help the process is to not think. So you've got to get out of your neocortex and occupy your brain with something else. Single-pointed focus is probably the best thing, and that can be like staring at something or someone or focusing on your breath.
Yes.
But just to, safety is the most important thing. Anna, do you want to add any other sort of conditions that we could suggest for women in strange situations?
Just as you say, safety is paramount, isn't it? Because we know how that affects the labor process and that to make it go along in the most smoothest way, we need that. Of course, labor happens, even though we might not feel safe, but it will go much more smoothly. And there won't be as much maybe interruptions in that or stalling or problems if we can really find ourselves feeling safe. And I would also say warmth. If you know, if you can keep warm, keep sheltered also from, you know, the elements, obviously. But that's going into safety, isn't it? And just create the inner safety. Like, turn within, find your breath, focus that's within. Yeah.
And so what it might look like to start with is all kinds of things. So maybe the membranes rupture and there's a release of the amniotic fluid. That may be the beginning. It may not. It may be a bit of blood called the show, some mucus. Maybe that's how it starts. And that can happen like even a week before labor begins. And usually the way it begins is cramps. So similar to period pains, but stronger. And basically they start and they get closer together and stronger and longer. That's the way labor progresses. Do you want to add anything to that?
No, absolutely. That is how it starts. And obviously, when you're in a disaster situation, sometimes you can be prompted to go into labor early, right? You can, because that is the reaction when we're under stress. Either we close up and we don't birth. We can like start, but then something happens and we just tense up and we just, the cervix just goes, no. But also it can happen the absolute opposite. The process goes really fast because that is, according to nature's design, the most safe thing for you and your baby. That's what your body thinks. It's two different options, isn't it? Either you just birth and you do it pretty quickly because nature goes like, okay, there's danger. Let's get this baby out. Or that's the opposite happens, that you might start your labor, something happens, the crisis happens around you, and you just close up and you stop laboring, right? And that is why safety is so important.
When you're safe, and you'll start up again when it's safe. So we have stories, just so everybody knows, there are some amazing stories of women giving birth in dreadful situations. Years ago, in the tsunami in Phuket, a woman gave birth up in a tree because that was when she was safe. So just, you know, we can trust this process. You know, there's stories of the women leaving Afghanistan when all that stuff happened recently, and women gave birth in the aeroplanes as soon as they took off. So nature is on our side here. And as you said, Anna, it'll either slow down and stop or speed up because it's the safest time.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, what's so important to understand is that most of the time birth is safe, right? Babies and mamas, you know, we're designed to birth babies even in a crisis. And so physiologically, we are most likely safe to birth our babies, even though we're not in a hospital, even though we're not having a midwife there, even though we're not being assisted. And I think that's really important for women to understand, that just because she's alone, she can do this. She was meant to do this. She and her body and her baby can do this.
Yeah, know how to do it. You know, just a helpful piece of information as well is like about 80% of the world's births happen in third world countries, usually without anybody helping. So, you know, we don't have a population problem. It works. Don't need anybody to make birth work. Your body knows how to do it. And trusting your body is actually the most important thing you could do. So labor will progress however it progresses, and it'll take as long as it takes. And as Anna said, it'll either slow down and switch off and come again when it's safer, or it'll go fast. But there's some basic things to think about that are the basic needs of a woman in labor that can help the process. And one of those things is to stay hydrated. So if it's happening super fast, then obviously that's less of an issue. But if it's going over a period of time, it's important for those who are helping the mum to offer her drinks of water or something that's got some calories in it and some minerals and whatnot. So like even an energy drink or a very diluted juice. But not stimulants, not coffee or tea or anything like that, because that can end up dehydrating you. But so signs of dehydration to watch for, and this again is going to be happening in a labor that's taking longer than going super fast, would be like flushed skin or dry skin, dry lips, saying they're thirsty, and actually being really tired. So exhausted. That can be a sign of dehydration, as can not passing urine very often. Yeah. So you want to be watching for those, and hopefully you're not seeing that because you're offering the mother sips of water whenever she wants it. And keep offering it to her, even if she says no. Just offer it the next contraction. So dehydration is something that you can watch out for. And also to help make it possible and easy for the woman to pass urine whenever she needs to. So, you know, in various situations, maybe that's weeing into a towel. Mm. I don't know, but make it easy because full bladders can get in the way later on. So you want to keep the bladder. And also as labor progresses, mothers can feel pressure on their bowels and feel like they need to go to the toilet and pass feces to do a poo. So often that does happen in labor, and women need to evacuate their bowels. So you're going to have to figure out some way of doing that, maybe into a bowl or a bucket or something, and then to move that right away from the woman so that the flies or whatever are attracted to that are not coming anywhere near the woman. And so women also want to feel like they need to do a big poo just before the baby's coming. So that can actually be something really exciting to hear them say. So helping them to pass urine and to empty their bowels is a really significant thing that you need to accommodate for them.
Yeah, very, very important. I love that you say that. And to keep hydrated and to have something with some sugar as well, some glucose or something to keep you going, especially if it's a really long labor, which can happen if it's on and off and you can't, fully be in a safe space all the time. So, yes, something, anything really that has some sugar in it to drink as well to get that energy going. I mean,
even soft drink, but make it really, really diluted.
Yeah.
Another thing that can happen in labor is the mother bleeding. And so this is normal, and some blood happens and sometimes it doesn't. But if it's happening, don't worry too much about it. Just accept that that's part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, because you can't do anything about it. You just keep on going.
Yeah. So maybe there's, again, a towel or pads if you've got them just to keep to collect the blood. So depending on where you are and if there's flies or whatever, then you're just going to have to maybe cover the mother with another cloth or blanket or sheet over the top of everything that's going on underneath her. And if it's cold, then you need to protect the mother from the colds. If she's shivering, that's not a good thing. She needs to be in a physically relaxed state, not shivering. So one of the fastest ways to warm somebody up is skin to skin. So have another warm body with, say, the dad or whoever with their top off and their front on the mother's back or whatever. So skin to skin is a really quick way to warm someone up, as is warming their feet and their hands.
Mm. Yeah, that's really good advice. Really good advice. I love that.
So vomiting can happen too during labor, and that's okay, but it's another thing to watch for and collect and deal with in a clean as possible way. And if there's excess vomiting, then you've just got to be paying attention to hydration again. But some women vomit and some don't. And often vomiting toward the end of labor is, again, another good sign, and it helps progress the baby's descent and the birth. The amniotic fluid, so if the membranes have ruptured and the fluid just continues to drip. So sometimes with a contraction, there's a little bit of a gush. Sometimes there's a constant drip. And then sometimes the membranes don't rupture until later on in the labor. And sometimes what we see also is the bag of membranes with the amniotic fluid in it protruding out of the mother's vagina. And it looks like it's the baby, but it's not the baby. And it is the amniotic fluid sac about to break. So you don't need to do anything. You don't need to touch anything. You just let it happen. And often this is associated with an increased pain for the mother and pressure. And then they pop and they burst and the fluid can gush everywhere. And again, just try and keep it clean afterwards. And then the amniotic fluid can have blood in it. It can have It can be clear, it can be flecked with white bits, it can have some green bits in it from an old poo the baby may have done, and it can have blood in it as well. So just let it keep coming, and sometimes and often when women's labours aren't fiddled with by other people, the membranes don't rupture until the end. So it's actually really good to have the membranes intact for as long as possible. It's a good protection for the baby, and it helps the cervix get even pressure on it from the baby's head coming down. If something comes out of the vagina and it's not the baby and it's not the membranes and it's maybe the cord or part of the baby, maybe the baby's coming out bottom first instead of head first. So if you see any feet or legs coming out, then probably what would be a good idea would be to have the mother put her bum up in the air. So get into an on all fours kind of a position with lower on her arms, so head on the floor with her bum up in the air, and just shield the back of her if there's any parts of the baby, like the foot or whatever there, just cover the whole of her so that it's staying warm and no flies and whatnot, and just stay in that position if there's no help until the mother can't do anything other than push the baby out. So in that situation, you're waiting for the cervix to fully open, and then the mother will push the baby out. And if there's other things coming out and the mother's been pushing for a while, then just encourage her to push really hard.
Yeah.
And get the baby out.
Yeah.
And so on to the birth now, do you think?
Let's birth this baby.
Okay, so the baby, let's imagine the baby's coming head first, and that's the most common thing. So let's focus on that. Mm. So once the mother starts to push, then that's the body saying that the baby's head is pressing on very deep down in her pelvis against her rectum, and therefore the body feels like it needs to do a poo. So as the mother pushes, she will know what to do. Her body will tell her what to do. She doesn't have to hold her breath and push. She just needs to flow with whatever her body's telling her. And so the contractions change from being the pain of the opening of the cervix to simply a pushing urge. So sometimes there's some pain, but sometimes there's not, and it's just the pushing. So the idea is that the mum pushes with the contraction, not in between, just with the contraction, and rests. So the energy shifts when the mother's pushing. So she usually wants to rest in between the pushing. So just let her do that. And she may look exhausted, but probably what's going on is the endorphins, the hormones of labor, are really deeply relaxing her and serving as pain relief, actually. So she goes into this altered state of consciousness. Just let her do that. She will wake up when the baby comes out.
Absolutely.
It changes. Yeah.
And it's just so amazing how that pause can also then oxygenate the baby, oxygenate the womb to really do the most efficient work. So it's actually really crucial that she breathes long and deep and relaxes in that spaces in between. Hey.
Yes. And just help her to get into whatever position she wants to get into. You know, when women are left on their own, and I don't mean isolated, but I mean without people telling them what to do, they will do what they need to do. So we can trust that. It's not, women don't need to be told how to do this. If they're not told, they'll get themselves into the right situation. So the head's coming out, coming down, and the mother feels the pressure on the back of her pelvis, and that makes the baby come, and the baby moves down through the vagina, and sometimes it takes a while for the head to come out. It can, you know, it could be even like five more contractions before the whole head's out, even when you can, from when you can see it, sometimes even longer, sometimes it comes out in one go.
Yeah.
It just depends. But the idea is you don't need to touch anything or do anything. You just leave the mother alone, help her to get however she needs to be, and make sure if there's any poo that you clean it away and give her sips of water if she wants it. And then the baby's head will be born. And then usually it's a whole nother contraction before the body comes out. So this can be a little bit shocking for people if they don't realize that.
Yeah.
So the can be born and be there for a whole, like, you know, even 5 minutes, yeah, if they're 5-minute contractions before the rest of the body comes out, and you don't need to do anything. So then when the mother starts to push again and the body starts coming out, really all you have to do is have your hands ready or something soft ready for the baby to land. The, yeah, mother will naturally get into a position that she will, like, physiologically think, if that's such a thing, that, mm-hmm, it will be safe for the baby to land. So she's probably going to be with her pelvis close to the ground. So have something soft over underneath her, have your hands there, and basically you don't have to pull the baby. It's best if you just don't touch them and you watch them be born and be ready to catch. Now, the warning is they are very, very slippery.
Yeah.
Be careful. So get low on the ground and lower the baby to the ground as it's born, and then give it straight to the mother, or maybe she'll just be grabbing it at the same time.
Mm.
So before we go into what to do next, is there anything else you want to add to that?
No, I love that description. Everything I would just say yes to. Mothers know how to birth. They wouldn't just stand and let their baby drop to the ground. Like, you know, women and mothers, they're so instinctual. And most women will be like on all fours or squatting or close to the earth as they birth their babies. And just to support people around to, you know, have blankets or warm things to cover the baby with, to keep baby warm. Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes the cord is wrapped around the baby's body because they've been twisting and turning inside the mother's womb, or even around the baby's neck. And look, contrary to popular opinion, it is no big deal if the cord is around the neck. Don't worry about it. All you have to do is unravel it when the baby's born.
Yeah.
In unusual situations, things have to happen where you can unwind it before the baby's body's born, but it's best if you just leave it alone. Just let the baby come out. And then the most important thing is that the baby is on the mother, skin to skin. Depending on the length of the umbilical cord, depends how far you can get up. But if the umbilical cord is short, then just get the baby on the mother's leg or the lower abdomen or whatever, but skin to skin. The baby's going to be wet and slippery. So straight onto the mother's skin, chest, hopefully, let's say, and then cover the mother and the baby with towels and blankets. So the baby can lose temperature really, really fast because it's wet, especially if there is a cross breeze. So you want to be trying to find a place to birth where the air is still. But if you can't do that, then the way to eliminate the loss of heat through breezes or wind on the skin is to cover the skin. So baby on the mother, both of them covered in towels and blankets and whatnot, with somebody holding the mother up from behind or beside or whatever. Be a human couch, be a chair for her to be in. So there we go. So gently pat the baby dry if necessary, but it's probably not even necessary. Just cover the baby and the mother with something dry.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes babies don't cry when they're born, you know, and sometimes it takes a little while for the breathing to initiate, and that's okay too. So, you know, they don't even start measuring babies' respiratory rate in hospital until 1 minute. So a minute is actually a really long time. So don't worry if the baby is born blue or purple. Blue or purple babies, that's fine. Yeah. If the baby is born white, like it looks like it's white, then that's more of an issue and you might need to do some resuscitation.
Yeah.
So before we talk about any resuscitation, do you want to add anything else?
No, I love that. That's exactly what I would say too, just exactly what you said. The most important thing is just to be supported and be warm.
Great. Okay. So babies, if they need help to breathe, probably it's a combination of many things. And one of them is the mother and the father talking to the baby, saying things like, "You're born now, we're here, it's safe, we love you, come here now," blah, 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 you know. So the baby gets the message that it's safe. Now, babies are not blobs. They are sentient beings. So it's really important to talk to them like you would be talking to each other. So call the baby in. Leave the cord attached. Don't even bother about cutting it or anything. Just leave that attached. And basically you're in this limbo time now between the baby being born and the placenta coming out, the placenta being born. So in that time, the baby establishes its respirations, it begins to breathe, and the mother's womb begins to contract, and then the placenta is born. So in situations like this, we just need to trust the process and not fiddle and let Mother Nature do her magic and her work and a woman's body give birth to her baby and her placenta. So the if you need to resuscitate the baby, then you need to do CPR. So the way to do CPR on a baby is the same as you do it on an adult, except much, 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 much lighter. So instead of doing the hands on the chest that you do for an adult, you're doing two fingers on the sternum for the baby, and you're pressing, and it's really soft, so you don't have to press too hard, and you just need to go fast, like this.
One, two, three, breathe. One, two, three, breathe. One, two, three,
and even
breathe.
Even if you can't do the breathing, yeah, you don't even have to do that too, because the pressing down, when the chest comes back up, it'll suck the air in. So you, the other thing you don't have to do is extend the baby's neck like you do a baby, like an adult when you do CPR. Just leave the neck in its normal situation, how it would be lying down. And do all of this on the mother, you know, on the mother. So you don't have to take the baby away from the mother. Don't do that.
Yeah, that's really important, because the mother is the best surface to regulate the baby, right? The heart rate, the breathing, the temperature. And then obviously the cord, if it's still intact, most likely it's pulsating oxygen. So if that baby's not breathing, it's getting its oxygen through the placenta, the pulsation of the blood. And I want to add that, you know, if you want to give a breath, right? So maybe dad can do that, or mom. It's just the air in your cheeks. It's just a little bit of a poof. And that is usually what babies need, right? Before they might even need that kind of CPR, they just need to open their lungs, right? So just a little poof of air a few times might just get that baby to awaken, and it's just open the lungs. Yeah.
Right. And also if there's a whole lot of slime coming out of their nose and their mouths, you know, that from, and slime, you know, not slime,
mucus. But anything
from the birth, mucus and stuff, and the baby seems to be gagging a little bit, you can suck it out with your own mouth. So you need to put your mouth over the baby's nose and mouth and suck really gently, not anything like you would suck. What would be the way to describe how to suck? Just, you know,
yeah,
like you would in a straw.
Yeah.
And that might clear the baby's mouth and nose and help it breathe.
And again, usually, it's stimulation as well. Any kind of stimulation will, even if there is nothing to suck out, you just even doing that might stimulate the baby, right? So anything that stimulates, right? Touching, massaging the hands and feet, massaging the back, talking to the baby, blowing in its face, all these things are stimulating the baby.
Yeah, helping the baby know it's time to wake up and be here.
Yeah.
And then at some point, and hopefully the mother's got the baby in her arms and the baby's looking for the nipple at this point and wanting to have a suck, and that's all like the best thing that can be happening as soon as possible. So then the contractions start up again and the placenta is going to be born soon. So that takes as long as it takes, like everything does, but usually the way it works is the mother is focusing on the baby, and then all of a sudden she gets another cramp and it's like, oh, it's starting again or something like that. So she may or may not want to keep holding the baby. She might want someone to come in close and help her hold the baby while she births the placenta. Just do what she says. Don't tell her what to do. Do what she says. And just say, like, how can I help, or what can I do, or whatever. And then the placenta comes out. And again, it feel that the most common way women experience it is that they feel the pressure on the back of their vagina. So again, like they need to do a little push. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it comes out in just one like go. Sometimes it takes its time. But basically, as it's coming out, getting the mother to blow long, slow, gentle breaths, like you would if you were blowing over the top of a bottle. Long, slow, deep sounds like, oh, can sometimes help the placenta come out. So it comes out, and if it gets stuck halfway, don't kind of fiddle with it, but just hold it up a little bit and get the mum to do a little cough. And that can sometimes help it come out. Now, if the mother's bleeding a lot after the placenta's born, you can break a bit of the placenta off and put it inside her cheek, and that can help stop the bleeding.
Yes. Yeah, that's what we do when we have nothing else to do. We use nature, right? We just do the best with the situation we have. And if you do bleed, massaging your tummy as well to kind of encourage contractions and potentially expel whatever might be still in there that could cause that bleeding, or just maybe a tired uterus or a bit overwhelmed uterus from maybe the stress of birthing.
Yeah. So the womb, after the baby's born and after the placenta's born, it needs to stay contracted so that you don't bleed. And what that feels like is that you would say the mother could put her fingers of both hands, like say this, just like halfway between her navel and her pubic bone, and just go in deep there and find the top of the womb. So what you want it to feel like is like a contracted muscle, not like an uncontracted muscle. So sometimes if you just reach your hands in there and you can't feel anything, then the idea is to rub around until you start to feel the womb contracting, and it needs to stay in that contracted state. And after a while, it just will. And usually you don't have to do any of that, because breastfeeding is the thing that will do that.
Yeah.
And with the baby on the mother's belly, you know, like it's all designed to work.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Just if you need to, it feels like when it is contracted, it feels like a tennis ball, like a really hard tennis ball. Like you can like hold your hand around it. It's like round and really firm and hard. And it might be a bit lower under the navel. It might be up at the navel if it's bleeding. So then just, massage it to make it that, very hard and like a tennis ball.
Yeah. And then it's just maintaining the connection for the mother and the baby and giving, she'll be hungry, she'll be thirsty, and they need to be warm and they need to be comfortable, and the mother will continue to bleed like a heavy period after the baby's come, and then that stays like that for a few days and changes in color and consistency and amount. And so you need something to collect the blood as well. So if you've got pads, great, but if you haven't, then you might need to be ripping up material or whatever and just managing it like that. But just to keep clean. And if there's some water around for the mother to have a wash afterwards, then let her do it, or let her tell you how to do it, because she might be sore.
Mm. What would you do with the placenta attached to the baby in a situation of crisis like this? Would you keep it as a lotus birth, or would you cut it?
Well, the thing is, you don't have to cut it quickly. That's the point for everybody to realize. So you could leave the cord and the placenta, the baby, you could leave the baby's cord uncut, so the baby connected to the placenta, for like a day before it would start to smell. So you don't have to actually worry about doing anything in a hurry if you need to move, for example. So when you're ready, and do this when you're safe and you can do it, basically what you need to do is secure the baby's end of the cord somehow and cut between that and the placenta. So sometimes people use shoelaces to do this. So you can do it a long way away from the baby's actual belly button. You know, it doesn't have to be up close. So you don't have to worry about that. You could do it. You could leave it like, 2 or 3 inches long and tie it there, because eventually that piece of cord that's connected to the baby will fall off. You don't have to cut it off. It falls off. It's just about disconnecting the baby from the placenta. So So some sort of way of tying it really tight. And actually, the longer you leave that, the easier that'll be.
Yeah.
Because the cord collapses. So it'll be easier to tie something tight around it to secure it before you cut it. And you could burn it. People sometimes burn them or, so you've got to be careful what you do there, thinking about infection and germs.
Exactly,
So burning it would probably be the smartest thing to do.
Burning would be great because if you can't obviously boil a scissor and sterilize something, then that could introduce infection, right, and germs. So, yeah, burning would probably be a better option if you don't have any way to sterilize a scissor.
Mm. But remember, you don't actually have to do anything in a hurry.
Nah. That's true. You can just
and you can sterilize. It. Yeah, you can sterilize scissors with fire.
That's
like
true.
If you've got a cigarette lighter or something, you could just burn the parts of, you know, the scissor, whatever you call those bits, the blades.
Yeah, the blades.
And obviously wait till they cool. But or if you've got any alcohol, you can sterilize scissors with alcohol. So fire, heat, or alcohol would be a good way to do it in a situation where you don't have lots of stuff.
Yeah. Burning the cord can take a bit of a time if that's the option you go for to burn the cord. It can take up to like 20 minutes, maybe even longer sometimes. So just know that.
And it'll smell. It'll smell like burning flesh.
Yes, that's true. And I guess if you're in a hurry, maybe that's not the greatest time. So, yeah, you can pack up the placenta attached to the baby, right? You can just pack it up in the best way possible.
Put the placenta. The placenta will weep, you know. It will. It's very juicy and it's got blood in it. So if you put that in a plastic bag and then keep that, you don't want to be causing any pulling of the placenta and the cord and the baby. So, but you also don't want to wrap the baby and the placenta together because it'll get cold and then it'll make the baby cold. So you need to keep them as two separate bundles, but very close together. If you're in a hurry and you've got to move, then that would be the smartest thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's feeding the baby and feeding the mother, as we said.
That's it. Keeping them safe and warm and protected and fed. Like we need nourishment now. And especially for the mother to be able to, you know, for the days after the birth, she needs to get really well nourished and as much as possible, try to be in a safe place for her milk to come in. Right. And it's really important to breastfeed. And if there's any struggle, like hand express, get drops out by actually trying to milk your own breast because it's so important. So important.
Yeah. And if there's any worries about feeding and as the babies, you know, in the next days or whatever, if there's other mothers around who are lactating, it's totally wonderful to share milk. So, you know, that's actually part of our herstory is to have fed each other's babies, you know. So that would be another thing to have, you know, as an option later on, if the mother's milk hasn't come in or whatever, then somebody else could feed the baby.
Yeah.
I guess the other thing we should talk about is if a woman is actually on her own and what she could do. So
basically,
I don't know, but I would guess that like other animals, and like you said at the beginning, Anna, it'll either stop and not start until you're safe, or it'll come really fast.
Yeah.
And if it's coming really fast, it's most probably going to work just fine.
Yes.
Yeah. So just get yourself into a position where you can stay for a little while, like, you know, maybe during the labor process and for a couple of hours after the birth or something.
Yeah.
And have water, if you can get it, to drink. And some sort of materials, clothing, towels, blankets, whatnot, to keep you and the baby warm.
Yeah.
And, you know, in these kind of situations, what we have to do is trust the process.
Mm. That's exactly it. You know, if we can't find safety outside of ourselves, we need to create safety within ourselves. right? We just have to will ourselves to believe that everything will be all right. We just have to will ourselves to trust in nature. And it has shown us time and time again that we can. Most of the time, women will birth their babies, babies will be born, and we just need to allow that process to happen through us. And I think that, you know, if you find yourself birthing an assistant, you have the choice, you know, to freak out. And I understand that definitely there will be a, you know, times of freak out, but then you have to will yourself into trust and safety within yourself and in your body.
Yeah. Call on all your grandmothers.
Yes.
Call on all the women who have given birth. Call the goddess. Call Mother Earth to hold you. Do the magic, you know. Call your guides and teachers. Do everything you can to create a safe space around you and within you. And then maybe we now talk about what to do, what we can all do to help at this time.
Exactly. That's definitely something I think that, you know, all the listeners to this podcast who are not obviously in the affected areas are all affected, because we're all one. We feel each other, right? We feel the collective. We're all hurting right now that this is happening in our world, and we feel each other. And so, yeah, me and Jane really wants to talk about how us as women, how we can support from afar. And so, Jane, giving you the mic. Yeah. Take it over.
Well, prayer, basically, prayer. And we can call that intentions, or we can call it wishes. It's all the same thing. So with intention, use every possible opportunity to send love, send protection, send deep care, send reverence to the women who are birthing now and the babies that are coming. So you can do that specifically at different times of the day. Sunrise and sunset are powerful portals. Yeah. You can do it with your menstrual cycle. So if you're bleeding, if you've got your period, collect some of your blood. However you do that, you can just soak whatever you're using to collect your blood in some water, and then you'll have some water with blood in it. And then you can do blood prayers, where you return that blood to the earth or to a pot plant or anything, to the soil. And as you do that, make a prayer. I give thanks for all the women birthing safely, all the babies arriving earthside safely. So that's with your blood. And then we can use the lunar cycle to do these prayers as well. So on the dark moon, which is the last day of the lunar cycle, we let go of all that no longer serves. And on the new moon, we call in all that is the healed version of that, or we plant metaphoric seeds of the things we want to grow. But what we've got coming up is the full moon. So on the full moon, which will be happening in the next sort of week and a half or so, we can align with the energy of full potential and make prayers, set intentions, make wishes for what we want the energy of full potential to be dedicated to. The first thing that comes to my mind is world peace. Yeah. So let's do the magic we can. You know, when enough people align and do the same thing, stuff changes. We know that. So if all the women of the world put their hands on their hearts and their hands on their wombs, or their womb space if they don't have a womb anymore, and just stand with your feet on the earth and speak out loud your words of love and protection for all the people of the world. We are powerful creatures. We can use our power for good. And that's the point, right? We want to use our power for good.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's something that you say, you know, we know that if enough people do something, things change. We know this. It's even science. Darwin talked about that, right? And so we know that this is true. This is not just like something airy-fairy fluffy. This is actual power that we have if we all do this together, and especially on these particular times of the moon, because then we know other women around the world will do this in the next 24 hours. So we actually align. We align and we do it together. I love that. Thank you so much, Jane, for sharing that.
And if you've got a drum. And feel what you want the drumbeat to send out into the world. Light candles for our sisters and our brothers around the world. Make prayers of, oh, well, you know, we all know what to be praying for now.
Yeah.
And for our for our dear sisters and brothers and children up in the Northern Rivers where you come from that are just in such terrible space with all the floods, then we just give thanks that all the help they need is available to them as soon as possible. And in the war-stricken areas, well, I just, you know, send my love.
Yeah.
Send my love.
One of the absolute beautiful things that come out of disaster is community gathering. And there is, you know, my heart is just overflowing while it's breaking with the amount of people coming together to support both from afar and near, both in the Ukraine and in Northern New South Wales. You know, the amounts of people sending money and funds, obviously donating, but also being there on the ground, helping all the birth workers that are now giving support either, yeah, online, like we're doing right now, you know, trying our best, but also on the ground, you know, offering housing and doula support or midwifery support or lactation support or whatever people can do. There's this outpour of help. And I truly feel and see how, especially I can see this because that's my community in the Northern Rivers, how that community already is very strong. And this is just creating the most strongest community right now because they're not getting government help. They're not getting the help that they need. They are coming together as a community right now and doing it themselves, the civilians helping civilians and us, you know, sending out this prayer now. And hopefully people will share this episode so they can get to the right people that needs it, both people that can maybe find themselves helping a woman. You know, someone can hear this and go like, okay, I know what to do now because I've got kind of this little debrief from Anna and Jane about what I need to do as a support person, right? And, you know, this is the thing. This is what we need to do. We need to just do whatever we can with the skills we have. And that can just be simply sharing this episode or it can be using what we do in the world for good in our platforms.
Absolutely. And I think that really important for us to remember that women actually don't even need help to have a baby. That's a new invention. So we can trust the process.
Yes, I think that's a really, really important point, you know, that we can't say enough, that most women and babies do not need any assistance. We just need to feel safe and protected. And yes, a support person just to love us through that process is, you know, preferably something to have, you know, that you don't have to fully be alone in this, but you can also be fully alone in this. You'll still birth your baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
And most of the time it's going to be a seamless process without any problem.
Yeah. So that's really important for everybody to remember actually. Yeah. And that women have been supporting each other having babies without any professional medical assistance forever.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And we know what to do. It's not rocket science. It's having a baby.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just about the remembrance, isn't it? It's about the remembrance. And I mean, this is about everything in life. We, you know, we are seeing how people are taking back their sovereignty in so many different areas of life. And this is a part of it. Reclaiming birth is a part of it. Mm. Taking responsibility and sovereignty over this really important rites of passage.
Yeah.
So yes, women can definitely birth by themselves. Obviously, when it's not planned, it can be really scary. But
yeah. Yeah. But just trust the process. It works.
It works. Absolutely. I also know that you have a project called Hygieia Health. Is that correct?
Yeah, Hygieia Health. Hygieia, the goddess's name. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to just share a little bit about what you do and also the resources that potentially people can find through your channel?
Yeah. Well, Hygieia Health is a charity, a not-for-profit that we've started over in Australia. And basically the big dream is that we will be opening birth houses all around the place. So that's where we're headed. But in the meantime, what we're doing is supporting local people in the crisis at the moment up in the Northern Rivers by funding and supporting midwives and mothers as they need. And yeah, so that's really what Hygeia Health's doing right now.
Beautiful. And I know that you're sharing on your stories all the different people that are offering help, whether it is childcare or breastfeeding or birthing.
Milk.
Yeah.
So social media can be really helpful at this time. And for those of you in the Northern Rivers, I'm imagining you've already figured out where the hubs are by now and where to get the help and the information. And in all the other places around the world that are in similar situations to Ukraine as well, like, just want to send all the women there just so much love and support in, you know, like, yeah, it's so full on.
Yeah, it is really full on. Thank you so much, Jane, for coming and sharing your wisdom with us. I really, truly hope that everyone listening will take this opportunity to help by sharing this episode on their social media. It's very simple to do. Just find it wherever you're listening to it, share it, and hopefully this will reach the right people that need it for the time being, but also for future.
Yeah, may it be so.
May it be so. Do you have anything else that you want to share with everybody before we finish our call?
Well, one of the big things that I've learned in my life is the wisdom of the cycles. And there's one line that I think is always really important to remember in times of crisis and hardship, and that is, this too shall pass.
Thank you so much, Jane. Such a pleasure.
Thank you, Anna. Thanks for reaching out across the world and saying, come on, let's do this.
Yes, for the women. Okay.
Good on you.
Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please consider sharing it. Leave a review or make a contribution on our Patreon page. And if you want to connect on social media, then find the podcast on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Thank you for listening.